Hello, friends. This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is June 3rd, and we are about to continue with Discomfort Week. But before we do that, I have to advise you, please check your podcast feed and make sure that you did not miss our most recent release, episode 717 of School Sucks. It was Emotional Manipulators for Hire, number 9, Non-False Fabrication. How cherry picking helped ruin science, the economy, higher education, race relations, America, and the world. I think I got that right. And how neat that the very day after we release it, we have this news story. You know, I feel so gross and stupid talking about current events. But really quickly, I just thought it was kind of, like I said, neat. Because all you can really do is watch things happen and go, neat, amusing, vindicating, whatever. In this case, the last one. We put out this show where we talk about primarily cherry picking, but one of the things that I wanted to make sure was like present and palpable in it was corporate media as infomercial. I kind of like that comparison, and I tried to hammer that home in the intro. I wanted you to make it through that intro if you heard it, feeling perturbed. In fact, I said to Nathan, I said, what'd you think of the intro for that show? It's a lot of work. Maybe you've never heard about how this podcast is a lot of work. But that was an example, and I asked Nathan about it when we talked today. He said, I don't know. I thought it was kind of annoying. I thought you overdid it. I'll tell you what, mission accomplished. It's kind of how I wanted you all to feel, and I hope you enjoyed the show after that. I didn't want you to be annoyed the whole time. I want you to be annoyed by those people, but I certainly don't recommend wasting any of your time watching what they're doing. But I'm really embracing this belief that there is a positive use for negative emotions, so much so that I owe Tim Pool an apology. I'll explain. I've been reading this book. It's called The Upside of Your Dark Side. We're actually doing a book club about it this Saturday. It was one of the major inspirations for Discomfort Week, as a matter of fact. And, you know, I've been kind of sour on what people like Tim Pool do, where he's just like getting people more and more agitated without offering any solutions. But agitation is a solution at like step one. You've seen the movie Network, right? Where he gives the Howard Beale, is that his name? He gives that speech in front of that television audience and says, first, you got to get mad. And I have this like this question going on right now. It's like, well, maybe that's Tim Pool's job. It's just to get more people mad. I hope those people know what to do with their anger. We're kind of really rolling the dice there, Tim. But I think, well, I like to feel like I'm not needing to tune in to and follow a lot of that stuff beyond the purpose of analysis that is more universal, like extracting lessons from this stuff that we can continue to learn from. I like to think we can do that, but just following it and reacting to it, that's for dorks. If you're not, number one, making it useful or getting beyond just the anger part. And I didn't want to like set this up by sounding like that's what I'm doing or that's what I'm encouraging you to do. I did think it was interesting that the day after we did this show about corporate news' infomercial, which is not like an enormous insightful revelation, and about the properties of cherry picking and how it works in the news, that the very next day, all of these Anthony Fauci emails leak, and right on cue, the corporate media has him on as the guest in their infomercial about what a great guy is and how responsible he was last year, despite all the obstacles and how he was under a lot of pressure, and cherry pick the emails to tell the exact story that they want. If you haven't seen this, you won't even believe it. But he's been on CNN, MSNBC, probably a few others, doing a real script. And I don't know what to make of all this. I just don't know what to make of all this. Daryl Becker's coming back on the show soon. This might be one of our topics of conversation. Every day I jot down a few notes of, like, these are things I want to talk with Daryl about on this whole follow-up to the This Is a Test series that we're going to do very soon. But it changes so fast and things really seem to lose their relevance very quickly. So we'll see where all that's at. We'll see what happens. This might be part of an evolving thing that I think we should pay attention to in some respects. I think there's a lot of focus on the wrong parts of this story. And I'm not saying it's not an important story and you're a dork for paying attention to it, but you're a dork for talking about it, so I'll shut up now. Anyway, Mindset and Mastery happens June 7th and 8th. You can still take a look at what we've put together and sign up at mindsetandmastery.com. Back to the discomfort zone. I love it when we bring in a third voice and hear a problem. Not that I want people that I care about to have problems, but we do. So I get to hear about that problem, and then we get to give some support and advice, and that's what we did here with Nick. So this is Discomfort Zone Season 3, Episode 3. It was released December 4th, 2019. The title, Nick Hazelton Futures. Description, we're investing. Nick Hazelton is a 21-year-old entrepreneur. He's probably 22 or 23 now. Farmer, media creator, and a School Sucks favorite guest since he first appeared on the show several years ago. He also loves weed. But hold that thought. Circa 2015, Nick told Brett he wanted to leave high school to pursue yak herding. And then he did it. He shared his self-education and self-reliance journey on numerous platforms, including anarcho-yakitalism podcast, School Sucks, The Freedom Fiends, and Unregistered with Thaddeus Russell. People who aren't inspired by Nick's stories are assholes. Recently, another millennial, entrepreneurial School Sucks listener, and past TTZ guest named Alex Bell, a.k.a. Young Alex, connected Young Nick with Discomfort Zone co-host Andrew for advice about a new business venture, hemp farming. What's hemp? Andrew asked. However, Andrew does understand how to effectively use other people's money and create win-win situations. In just the last year, he quickly built a successful real estate Airbnb enterprise, and Nick currently needs outside investment. Or does he? In a preliminary conversation, Andrew advised Nick on a variety of options beyond going to a bank and asking for money. And after listening to Nick describe his goals and the needs behind those goals, Brett and Andrew offer a better solution and a more promising path. Wow. I added the wow. Please remember that there are dozens and dozens of episodes of The Discomfort Zone and other great bonus shows behind our paywall for supporting listeners. You can figure out how to do that if you're interested. We could always use your help. But today, I feel like I should tell you the clock is ticking. On Mindset and Mastery enrollment, we go live on Monday. There's no way for you to get this presentation after that. So, mindsetandmastery.com. All right, thanks for listening. We'll do one more of these before this week ends. Take care. So the redeeming feature of Nick, there's an interesting backstory to this too. There's a video on my YouTube channel of it's a Free Talk Live highlight clip from, I think, 2015. Nick calls in. He goes, I want to drop out of school and be a yak herder. Mm-hmm. And so I make a video clip out of it because I'm like, how, what a novel, neat thing. Like, this is a kid who wants to drop out of school and herd yaks. Neat. A nice human interest story.
Okay.
But then he did it. Because, like, Ian and I were listening to him talk and we're going, what a neat idea. Cool. Good luck, kid. And then he did it. And then he started showing up. And then he became like, an influencer in the scene.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen like 9 people speak my entire life. And Nick is one of them.
Yeah, exactly. So he had this idea, made it happen, and is in the process of making it successful. And I'm more than happy to hear him out on another idea. And hopefully together we can be as helpful as possible. It sounds like you, Andrew, have already been fairly helpful.
Well, I don't know. So far, all I've said is this is shit. It's not going to work.
In 5, 4, 3.
I don't like starting this show at all. We have other shows that we start and much easier to start. Season 3, episode 3 of The Discomfort Zone. Brett's here, even though he's been quiet. I'm here, and we do have somebody on the phone, Young Nick.
Young Nick.
Not to be confused with Nick from other podcasts, Old Nick.
Or Young Alex. Nick Hazelton, our friend from Oregon, and a longtime School Sucks contributor. His first appearance on the show was probably, 4 years ago. Nick, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. And before we get into Nick's issue, which we're going to talk about in significant detail, I'm very interested in learning more about what you're up to, Nick. I know Andrew already spoke to you about this. We have a nice way of starting around here with the week's big accomplishment. Now, we haven't done a Discomfort Zone.
Oh, it's been so long. I forgot we even did this.
In a month. So I think it would just be best to focus on the last week, and that's a feature of accountability. Like every week, we should be doing something that we are satisfied with, so we don't have to go back 3 weeks to find an example. That means we're not punching enough planetary dicks. We call this punching the world in the dick, and Andrew, you can go first. We'll go in alphabetical order.
So you're saying you don't mean to punch old dicks?
Right, new dicks.
New dicks, okay.
Yeah.
The biggest dick I punched, I guess, was getting a house fully ready and photographed. Kind of when it's ready for photos is essentially when the house is ready.
Right, ready to be listed on Airbnb and similar services.
Yeah, yeah. So I just did that. And on one hand, it's behind schedule. On the other hand, I sort of met the deadline for the new schedule. So I guess it worked out.
And for the next 2 days, I'm living in this house as a test guest.
Yeah.
Yes.
You stayed there last night. So yes. Did I for the first night.
Ah, yes. So far, you need a place for people to work.
Mm.
Yeah. My job as a test guest, everybody, is to make a list of creature comforts that the house lacks. And I was lying on the living room floor trying to type on my computer in front of me. And I'm going, God, this guy needs a place to work here. So that's all I came up with so far. For me, last Friday was Black Friday. I did a sale through like social media campaign, many podcast announcements, and email marketing, something that I neglected to do for a very long time. And was able to make quite a nice chunk of money on our Ideas into Action virtual summit by just sending a couple emails and making a couple social media posts. It wasn't like there wasn't 150 plus hours of work of stuff created to promote, but to get a few extra sales and to put a nice chunk of change into our account for the university, really with very little effort, that was a nice thing. So I would like a dick punching to be, you know, more effort, but there's something very satisfying about a high leverage action like that, especially if it produces a lot of income. So I repeated it today. It is Cyber Monday with a brilliant email. You should all go read it. It's either in your inbox, and I reposted it in the Facebook group. And I'm hoping for another successful day today, but I haven't checked the numbers yet.
Can you elaborate on the origins of this email?
The origins of this email?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, yeah. One of the developments since our last discomfort zone is I realized I wasn't getting enough input. I wasn't getting enough inspiration. I wasn't taking enough time to learn new things. So now I have scheduled time. First thing in each day after I do the basics of my morning routine, like making coffee, journaling, meditating, setting up the day, I will set aside an hour to learn. And last week, I read a book that had been on my list for years to read called Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill. It's kind of like his a different narrative version of his books like The Master Key to Riches and Think and Grow Rich. It's all those principles put into a conversation that he's having with the devil who's trying to stop you from doing those things. So I read that, took a lot of notes. I've got that in my mind. That was good. And this week I'm turning more towards finance stuff to get my gears turning on that like they should have been for a while now. So Andrew suggested this Bigger Pockets podcast. He listens to the real estate version. You listen to all three versions, right?
Yeah.
So I'm starting with the money version, and I will probably I comb through some of the titles for their business version of this podcast. But I think that that's a really positive way to start my day, to motivate me in the morning, thinking about money and how to not waste it, and how to make more of it. So I'm going to run that experiment with this input inspiration time. And this morning I was listening to a version. They had this guy called Mr. Money Mustache on. And he said this, he had this great line, like, the key to happiness is being in control of as many aspects of your life as possible, right? Don't be in situations where you don't control. And that's kind of like the thing I always say on School Sucks. the things that you really enjoy that are really gratifying and satisfying and meaningful in your life are the ones you voluntarily choose. The things that suck are the things that are imposed on you. And obviously, the number one example on my show is school as an interference to learning. But I hear this guy say it in, you know, kind of a different arena, and it really resonates with me. So I start typing this email thinking about us watching The Irishman. Nick, do you know about The Irishman?
No, not at all.
Oh, my God. It's Martin Scorsese's new movie. You know about Martin Scorsese?
Yes.
Okay. So he's got this new movie out. It looks really it was really phenomenal, but it looked really phenomenal from the very first moment I heard about it. We watched it. It was released on Netflix simultaneously with the theaters. So it's 3.5 hours long. And I thought there was a nice amount of freedom and flexibility in being able to watch it at Andrew's house on Netflix, where we could pause, fill our plates up with food, make a dessert, have a pee, all of those things that wouldn't have been options in the theater where somebody else controls your entertainment and enrichment experience. So then I started thinking about, well, I got this virtual summit that we did in October, and I jammed 25 hours worth of stuff into 3 days, but there's a downloadable version where people can consume it at their own pace. And when I do an encore presentation in January, it'll be spread over 3 Sundays, so people get lots of break time and reflection time in between. And I say, ooh, there's a connection here. So I wrote this nice email / Facebook post, and I sent it out, and I was really happy with how fast I thought of it and how well I executed it.
So the reason I wanted to hear the origins of the email is because going forward on this show or others or just in person, I want to hear updates about what you're learning from this show. Because a lot of the principles I've heard too, but I'm always hearing it in a solo environment.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm only seeing it through my lens. I'd like to see it through somebody else's.
Well, I mean, I think it's one of the things that you would credit as some of the positive developments. You said one time you wanted to be a financial hot girl.
Yeah.
Remember? And Nick, do you know what a financial hot girl is?
I don't. I assume it's somebody who's hot who explains finance.
Okay. And well, the traditional hot girl, she walks into a bar being all hot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she walks in and gets free drinks and gets proposed, not proposed to, but propositioned from men throwing money around and offers to her. Like, let me buy you a drink. Let me chat you up. Let me tell you about this. Let me tell you about that. So she walks into that bar. The bar is her world. The world is her oyster. I want to be the financial version of that. I want to be the guy who can, you know, get an old rich guy a return on his money. I want to get proposition from these same rich guys, just not maybe in a slightly less sexual way.
Yeah, but now slightly. People are coming to not Andrew for advice, and that's actually how you intersect with our story here on the Discomfort Zone today. Our friend Young Alex, who is a most frequent Discomfort Zone guest ever, actually suggested that you talk to Andrew about a venture you're currently exploring, and that's what we're going to do today. But lots of people are coming to you, Andrew, for these kinds of advice sessions. And we'll see how we do today with that.
So before we get into too much detail on that...
Yeah. Well, we got to do Nick's punching.
I know. That's what I was going to say. But also, you were talking about a high-leverage dick punching.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought of a different one.
Okay.
That I kind of want to talk about because it might get brought up again in the future on this show. So, Nick, why don't you go ahead with yours? Hopefully it's unrelated to the main topic we're going to discuss with you. Preferably, if you can do that.
It actually is. I got a nice punch in. I live in a little camp trailer, like a little 14-foot travel trailer on my family's property, and I upgraded. I got a free upgrade. I won't go into the whole details of the story, but basically, somebody dropped off a very nice trailer on the side of the highway in Oregon here where I live, and I got it, and so I got a free upgrade on my on my home, and I'm selling the other one, so I made a little bit of money too. But it's very nice to have an actual
15 footer.
it's an 18 footer instead of 14.
Now, when you say somebody dropped on the side of the highway, they dropped it for you, or is this just, you know, a faulty trailer hitch and you got lucky?
Yeah.
It wasn't faulty. It seems like it was placed there on purpose. The landowners tried to get it removed for about 2 months and nobody came and claimed it. The police wouldn't do anything about it, so I did something about it.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty resourceful.
Yes. Yeah, I got lucky too. It's like it doesn't leak and it doesn't have any holes in it like the one I do live in.
Mm. Well, frugality is something that aligns with Andrew and I were actually talking about this just the other day, and then I heard it echoed on this Bigger Pockets podcast this morning. Being young and frugal. When I was your age, I spent. How old are you now, Nick? 19?
21.
Oh my God. I'm Nick. I'm so sorry. Wait, I feel like you were.
Christ, you're younger than I thought.
I feel like you were 14 in 2014, like the first time we talked. I'm sorry. Nick.
I was 16, I believe. And I might have been 15 when we first spoke.
Okay, that makes sense. So, Nick is. But when I was 20 years old, I worked in a gas station and I lived in a college dorm. And I had zero financial education, and we would make money at these jobs, and we would go to Walmart and just try to – it was more money that we could spend in a week. I was making like $100 a week, and I didn't know what to do with it all. With a cigarette and a drinking habit, could not spend all that money. So there'd be like $50 left over. A 12-pack of Natural Light was $4. A pack of cigarettes was $2.
You're a real Richard Pryor.
What do you mean?
Brewster's Millions.
Oh, okay. So we would go to Walmart and be like, what are we going to do with all our money? And then we just buy ridiculous stuff like karaoke machines.
Yeah, you're supposed to.
Yeah. So the way you live at your age with this frugality and finding places where you can save and adapt and take advantage of luck, I think that's great.
Well, you're assuming frugality. So, Nick, you have two trailers that cost you relatively nothing.
Oh, he could have Exhibit there right now pimping
right,
the trailer
that,
for him.
Or he could have 100 karaoke machines.
That's true. That's true. So that's pretty cool, Nick. And I guess that takes us to this next venture that you're contemplating right now. Can we start at the beginning? I introduced it. I posted in the Portman Show group. Learn about hemp farming today on the Discomfort Zone, but why don't you start at the beginning, how this fell into your lap or how you sought this opportunity out. Take us through the story and bring us right up to where you are now with this.
Nick, do you mind if I intro the message from Alex from a few months ago?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So young Alex, most frequent Discomfort Zone guest, collaborator, friend. Mm-hmm. Young Alex is a very friendly, sweet man.
Sweet man, yeah.
And he has put me in touch with many people over the year and a half that I've known him,
mm-hmm.
a little less than that. And a few months ago, back in September, I get included on a group message with Alex saying, "Hey, Andrew, Nick's looking to get info on the CBD hemp growing business. Estimate is he'll need 20 to 30K of upfront investment. Revenue of 1.5 million, I guess. Obviously, you're not in this business, but figure from a business plan slash sales slash getting and managing investors standpoint, you'd have some solid advice for him." So I see this message and I go, oh, Alex is just connecting me to another stranger. And based on what I've read so far, I have no tools to help this person out. I don't know who this person is. And I probably read it while driving or doing 10 other things and then just put it out of my mind. And then Nick responded. And I didn't realize this was Nick. This Nick.
Right.
I just thought it was a guy named Nick. So Alex or Nick responds. And over a month goes by. And I didn't see this message. And Alex hits me up, calls me or texts me or something saying, "Hey, did you ever connect with Nick?" And I went, "Huh?" And he reminded me that I neglected to help this person out. So I went back and I realized what Nick it was, and I still felt that I had nothing to add to Nick's situation. But nevertheless, I'll hear him out and he can hear what I have to say on it.
Okay.
And that brings us up to context, I think.
All right, Nick. So rewind to before that point where you first start considering this opportunity, what it is, how it works, and why you're attracted to it.
Sure. So I'm lucky that my family, my parents own about 55 acres here of nice, flat, agriculturally zoned land. And I've been running yaks and hogs and few other different animal projects on these pastures for a while. And it's made me a little bit of money, not much, but I'm paying off debt and I'm starting to get on top of it. And it's starting to burge into a business. But I am, I've also have been thinking about some other ways that I can make money. And my buddy, one of my friends from high school, was working for a field cropper who decided to do a very large field of hemp this year. And so he was involved in that. And he came out and he told me, "Hey, dude, what are you doing? You're a stoner." Because I'm just known around here and people know me from online. You look at me, I'm a long haired stoner kid. And he's like, "Why aren't you growing hemp?" And I'm like, "Oh, shit. Why am I not growing hemp? Because that sounds like a really fun thing to do." And then I thought about it. I thought, well, we should try and look into this. So I held on to that idea over the summer. And then I got the opportunity to work for a neighbor that I've known for quite a long time. I grew up with his daughter. She was in the same grade as I was, and we still hang out. So anyway, we got the opportunity to work for him. He grew hemp last year. And he grew another crop this year and he needed some help harvesting. And so me and a couple of my friends went over there and helped him harvest. And as we were doing it, we realized, wow, this is just so much fun. We get to play with weed all day and it's legal. We don't have to have a license like you do with recreational. And we're making good money. You know, we're being paid $20 an hour. It was not under the table, but you know, I don't remember how much we pulled out of it. I have a contracting company, an LLC that I can contract through, so I don't have to pay payroll. But anyway, as we did that, we just kept looking at it like, damn, I could take an acre or three and do the minimum 5,000 plants. That's what's legal. And maybe we can make a living because I don't need this much pasture. I can take 2 acres out of my 40 for the yaks and try something new. And as I started looking at the costs and I've been trying to kind of set up a business plan for this. I'm making slow progress now, but a couple months ago, I did all the math that I could think of, and I've slowly added some things into that figure. And I thought that we could probably do it for, you know, between, we could do 2 acres of hemp, 5,000 plants, for about $25,000, you know, give or take on some of those costs. So I told Alex and I pitched this to the mastermind group that I'm in, which includes, young Alex. And they gave me a lot of advice on how to do it, or what to think about. But my pain point was, how do I get the money to do it? Because I don't have $20,000 and, you know, I'm not going to be making that in the next year or so with yaks. It's something I could probably afford in 3 or 4 years, but not very quickly. And I thought, well, I want to get into this business soon, but not, you know, too soon that I don't know what I'm doing. So after putting in a lot of research, talking to the mastermind group, Alex recommended I talk to Andrew. And so he set up that just from the standpoint of how do I find an investor or how do I get that money? Because he knows that that's something that Andrew has to do to invest in properties. And so I had kind of the intention that we would, that me and a few of people would try to figure out how would we do this. I'm setting up the business plan, and doing kind of the secretarial and financial work, you know, the business end of things, while I have somebody that can run tractor for me and do the actual building of infrastructure. So, I started piecing it together, but as I thought what we would do is find an investor that would buy into this plan. If we set it up well, you know, we could find somebody, but I didn't think I could get a bank loan, because they're not interested in touching cannabis. And, I figured I'd have to find a private investor, but through talking to Andrew, we came to some different conclusions. So I think that sets it up as what we're thinking of is I've got, the permission to use the land, and I've got at least some of the basics of how to do the growing, harvesting, and processing of CBD hemp flower.
So okay. I think what happened was when Nick went to the mastermind for help, yeah. Alex came back and said, Nick, I have the world's greatest hemp expert for you.
Yeah, yeah, Andrew.
Exactly. Let me put you in touch with Andrew. And then I called up Nick and I said, all I know about hemp is it is somehow related to weed, and I don't know what CB or D is.
Right, right.
End of call.
So and just to start out, I would say I'm all in favor of doing something that you think is fun and that you're passionate about and you love. And then there's like a dozen other like equally important considerations that would follow that. But I think the next step would be to hear about the call you did with Andrew, what questions Andrew asked, since those questions have already been asked. If they are different from mine, I'll ask mine after. But what were the developments once you guys started going back and forth on this?
And I think this will be a really good kind of exposition for hopefully a future call where there's some resolution or results mm-hmm. from what Nick ends up doing going forward, whether he scraps the idea altogether or has great success or something in between.
Yeah.
Right. So basically on the call, I kind of pitched Andrew, this is what I'd like to try to do. I think that I've set up a business, or I figured out the plan. I'm still kind of organizing it into something that I would present to somebody, but I think I've calculated the costs, and I think it's going to cost me between 20 and 30K, but most likely on that lower end of things. And I think that I can get a profit of between $500,000 and, this is gross profit, or, and 1.5 million between 500K and 1.5 million. And that's going based off of prices that I've seen online for the past year or so.
Sure.
There's some places that, anyway, they track that. So anyway, I looked at those figures and I thought, here you go. What do you think about that, Andrew? What do you think I should try to do? Because I'm thinking I want to have an investor. I want to find somebody that can put up some of this money because I don't have it at the moment. And pretty much immediately he shot me down. It's like, hey, listen.
Did I?
Buddy, you don't have a track record. Nobody's going to believe you can do this.
Well,
I was not at all offended by that. It did kind of shook me, and I'm like, oh yeah, you know what? Like I don't have a track record. I have one business, and if you look at that, I have not taken it out of the red yet. You know, but
I think the best you could do.
I don't have anything under my belt. I'm very young, and I say I have experience, and maybe I can write a pretty plan. But like Andrew said, that doesn't mean anything. People really look for your track record. Can you do it?
No,
that's what people care about.
Right. I think what might wind up happening is if you make a really persuasive pitch about why somebody should be investing in the hemp business, they would say, okay, I'm going to go find somebody with a track record. I'm going to go find somebody who knows what they're doing and give my money to them. So there's...
The only thing you have to sell to them is the idea of that type of investment. And I'm shocked to know that banks are not lending for that.
Yeah, they might be doing stuff for hemp, but they definitely do not touch recreational marijuana.
Okay.
But you're not touching recreational marijuana. Except in right. like all other aspects of your life, but not in this business.
Yeah, right. Yeah, just okay. Not in the business sense.
But let's look at this objectively, though. I mean, like I said on the phone to you, Nick, no offense, but like I go to places where there's people with money, successful people, investors, and I'm the young schmuck who doesn't know anything. And I'm an old man. But you look like pot infiltrates most areas of your life. You've cultivated that look. You have long, curly, crazy hair. And we just learned that you're 19. Like
21.
Sorry.
I thought you were kidding.
No. Yeah. Nobody is going to take you seriously. But that's not meant to offend you. Like, with all that being said, holy shit, you're a way better 19-year-old than me or Brett. Mm-hmm. Sorry, 21. When Brett was 21, he's buying karaoke machines. When I was 21, I was aspiring to drive a tractor trailer. And I was living in the world's shittiest house for $150 a month. I had somebody living in my closet to save me on rent money.
So the redeeming feature of Nick is there's a video on my YouTube channel.
He's so much further ahead.
Well, no, it's just, but there's an interesting backstory to this too that I know I've told on School Sucks several times. There's a video on my YouTube channel of it's a Free Talk Live highlight clip from, I think, 2014, 2015. And Nick calls in. He goes, I want to drop out of school and be a yak herder, right? Mm-hmm. And so I make a video clip out of it because I'm like, what a novel, neat thing. Like, this is a kid who wants to drop out of school and herd yaks. Neat. A nice human interest story.
Okay.
But then he did it. Because, like, Ian and I were listening to him talk and we're going, yeah, that's what a neat idea. Cool. Good luck, kid. And then he did it. And then he started showing up. And then he became, like, an influencer in the scene.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen, like, 9 people speak my entire life, and Nick is one of them.
Yeah, exactly. So he, had this idea, made it happen, and is in the process of making it successful. And I'm more than happy to hear him out on another idea, and hopefully together we can be as helpful as possible. It sounds like you, Andrew, have already been fairly helpful.
Well, I don't know. So far, all I've said is this is shit. It's not going to work.
Okay.
According to Nick's story.
Well, I guess, Nick, then yeah. I would ask you to drill down for a little bit more detail. How did you estimate what the startup cost would be, and how do you determine what the revenue can be?
Oh, see, I took the opposite approach. I didn't care about any of that.
I'm just curious.
No, I'm curious too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how I did it is I started out with looking at what are the legal requirements, and I looked at the regulations, and I read through that and tried to pick up all the costs out of that. So there's licensing, and then there's the minimum cost of buying plant seeds. That together is about $6,500. $5,000 is the minimum, because pretty much the standard price for seeds in Oregon is $1 a seed. So 5,000 seeds, $5,000. And so from there, I calculate those minimum costs. Then I looked at what is it going to take to do the actual work of planting it out. So we have the seeds, I have the license, I'm legally allowed to do it, do the work. What does that cost with using tractors, paying somebody to do it, building a fence around it? How do you know the drying facilities, the labor it would take to pay people to process it and harvest it? And then, we have the cost of that infrastructure to dry the. Then I looked at I didn't find much. I don't know if I did very well on some of these transportation costs, but. I tried to estimate a bit about what it would take to transport it to a facility in California, just because that's who I was thinking about trying to sell it to.
Okay, so when you talk about selling it, you're selling it to a processor, or you're going to process it yourself?
I'm going to sell it to a processor is my plan, but there's a kind of a you have to you harvest the plant, you dry it. And then you put it into bags. So there's kind of four steps along that process of drying it and trimming it is what you would call it. But that's what I mean by my processing costs. But I would try to sell it to a processor in California.
Okay. What's the life cycle or what's like the I'm sorry, I don't know the term, like the growth cycle of the plant from seed to harvest?
Sure. You're probably supposed to plant in May or June and then harvest in October. So I guess that's about 6 to 4 months.
Right. And you're in a place where you're kind of limited by what the growth season can be.
Yeah. The main problem here with hemp so far is the rain. Everything yeah. molds. No matter what you're growing, it's likely going to mold by the time that it's by the time it's mature. So you just have to deal with that. but
have you tested your soil?
Fear. What's that?
Have you tested your soil?
I have not tested my soil. And that is something that people may want me to do. There's not, there aren't any real inputs that I would probably put in to do much fertilization. I don't think that I'll need it, but, I did add, so my difference between my $20,000 and $30,000 is the labor costs and those extra inputs. So yeah. I'm saying that all my inputs are irrigation and some, mulching that I'm going to be doing. I have different systems of how to add nutrients to the soil, but it's not as quick as a chemical fertilizer or a more refined compost or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference there, is it's about like an extra $5,000 if I hire some people, and it's an extra $5,000 if I put in, it's not quite that number, you know, it's anyway, it's around there for extra fertilizer.
See, and this is the part where you're trying to have kind of an entrepreneurial discussion here, and you're getting, I'm not saying you're getting, but Brett led you down a path where you're focusing solely on these details. Now, it's great that you can quantify all these expected expenses, but this is only what you can think of ahead of time.
Well, what I'm doing, the purpose of this exercise is do, and not that I would think of something that Nick hasn't, but just in case I do, is there something that takes the, you know, estimated startup cost from 20,000 to 40,000 or 60,000?
Right.
Like the next question would be like, what kind of legal hoops do you have to jump through? And I mean, we're actually moving in a direction. We're going to get more information because you already know a guy who's doing this, right, Nick? You already worked for this guy.
Yep.
So, Andrew, that was a feature of your conversation as well, right?
Yeah, but on the cost side of things, you know, I understand what he's trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he is trying to put together a reasonable number to go out and shop for investors because he has fear about going out and trying to raise capital, right?
Sure.
So the only tool he has in his toolbox is, well, I can just try and be cheaper.
Yeah.
But if it's an investment, cheap doesn't matter, right? Like the amount doesn't really matter so much. The return is what's important.
Exactly. Because going out and saying it'll only be this much is kind of like...
You feel like you're asking for less money, which you are, but that shouldn't really be the deciding factor as to whether or not you do this.
And there's a subtext there, I think, for an investor where what he the person actually might be hearing is you only stand to lose this much, right? So
right.
What does that say about, you know, your sense of assuredness about what you're doing, you know?
Right. So you're making yourself cheaper intentionally so you can mentally feel better about going and asking for this money. I think.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I wouldn't think about that at the time. And that's one thing that was like the first thing Andrew hit me with. I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah, no, I get that.
Well, that and two, if you're of that mentality, then you're naturally going to be, you know, kind of calculating these costs on the lower end to keep your number as low as possible. You're going to subconsciously be choosing the lesser of two potential cost options where you say, okay, this one supply that I need is this much. Well, that's probably the low end that you chose, whether you realize it or not, just to keep that total number that much lower. So I don't know what's all needed. I don't know how many tractors you need or how many, you know, hole diggers or, you know, all the other technical terms. But one thing you need is you need to set up an LLC. That's not a lot of money, but it's still a few hundred dollars. And a few hundred dollars out of 20 to 30 grand is a pretty good percentage. Now, there's that. There's insurance. There's all these things that immediately came to my mind that you need to spend on. And I assumed that one of them you hadn't thought of. And if there's one of those that you hadn't thought of initially, then there's probably a dozen or two dozen more things that you haven't thought of, no matter how hard you try, because you're not even going to know about them. You're not even going to be aware about them until the time comes that you need to actually do it. So
And I didn't think about insurance at all. That was a big thing that I didn't even consider.
Right. So if you got that, let's say you got $30,000, you go, great, mission accomplished, goal achieved, let's go. And you start going, you're going to burn through that $30,000. You're not going to be able to go back and ask for more legitimately because you're basically going to have to say, look, I fucked up. I need more money. And no one's going to give it to you, right? Somehow you got that first $30,000, and now what are you going to do? If you had extra money laying around, you wouldn't be asking for $20,000 or $30,000. So if you're going to put in all this work and effort, it, I don't think it matters if it's $30,000 or $300,000. If it makes sense, it makes sense. But again, no one's going to look at you and go, yeah, I feel confident investing in you. And if you're shopping around for total stranger investors, then that means that you must have exhausted every person you know, every family member, everyone who knows you, every relationship you already have, right? That's what I would think if I were an investor looking for somewhere to put my money and get a return.
Exactly. And so that made a lot of sense to me. And it wasn't something that I had considered, which, you know, proved to me the point that, like, oh, yep, there's got to be much more that I'm not considering.
And I'm only pointing that out based on experience. Like, there's plenty of costs that I didn't, you know, plan out ahead of time, but that's fine because I kind of set up a situation where it wasn't, okay, this much money, that's the cap, no more. And I had a little bit to, you know, deal with those flexible situations. But the more money that was dumped in from an investor, the more money that investor is going to get back. So it's not like I created a scenario where I said, okay, I need $30,000. That's that. And if I go back and ask for more, it's a bad situation. It's actually not a bad situation. It's a good situation considering, depending on how you look at it. If you look at it and you think there is success happening here from the standpoint of the investor, if you go, this operator's having success, I gave him this much money, I could see this success, so I'm fine giving more, then it's okay for the operator to go back and ask for more money if the operator did make a mistake or maybe sees a new opportunity. So you don't want to look at it as, oh, I fucked up. You want to look at it as, oh, I could do even better if X, Y, and Z. Even though I have this much, if I got this much more, I could do this much better. And you got to prove that. But again, if I were an investor with $500,000 trying to put it somewhere, I would look at you and go, okay, he only wants 20 to 30. Like, surely he must either have that money or know somebody who does. Why hasn't he got that money? Why would he go to outside sources for such a low amount? So I think the low amount is only going to hurt you.
Yeah.
Like, that's a loan from your uncle.
Point. Yeah. And I think there were many people that I had in mind at first of who would I reach out to, but my thought is these people aren't going to be interested. Like, my family's probably not going to be super interested in doing that. But I didn't really think through that to the point of, like, you know, because I've never had more than like $5,000 at one time in my hand, you know? So I don't know how to, you know, if I had that amount of money, I don't know where I'm going to try and invest it. Right. So I haven't thought through that. So it's great to be able to get that advice from somebody who has asked for a large amount of money.
Right, because I went into it. I had no track record. I had no way to prove that I'm going to actually give somebody a return on their investment. I had nothing other than a relationship with this person.
And that kind of takes us to where he's at now, right?
Exactly.
And this was also an outcome of the first conversation you guys had about this. You do have this resource. This is a very, I think, good and promising place to be. Somebody who already does it, that you already have a relationship with, that you've already hopefully proven yourself to a little bit as a worker. So,
and that's a business relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter how you, you know, think of it today, that is a business relationship.
So now let's talk about this hemp guy that you worked for near you. And I think the thing we're going to tackle today is your next conversation with him and how that's going to work.
Yeah.
And so what the outcome is you're hoping for.
Right. So as I said, I grew up in this area, and he's a farmer down the road or down the river, and he lives about a mile away from me. And so we picked up some work for him, and he seemed to be very impressed. He's a very nice guy. He's not the kind of guy that would tell you, you know, you suck it at trimming hemp, but he seemed very appreciative of us being able to help him out with the work. And I think we did a good job at being autonomous. And it seems like he's a guy that kind of appreciates people just kind of figuring out what to do. So I think we have built some trust with him, but basically, through working with him, we've chatted a little bit about, doing it myself, and he's interested in helping, and he's interested in the least giving, his expertise, you know, but he also offered, to help us out with seeds somehow. We buy them from him, of his own genetics, and he offered, just some expertise on like how to jump through the legal hoops. Cause it is a weird situation with the laws right now. So anyway, a great opportunity, right? And he's interested in doing it. He's a guy that's been involved with biodynamics farming. I'm debating whether I should name him. I think he wouldn't mind. His name is Jim Fulmer, and he was big in the biodynamic industry, and he's known for being a seed producer, at least understanding the genetics of plants and how to breed your own stuff. So anyway, he's been growing hemp for, I believe, 2 years. I'm not sure when he got started, but I'm pretty sure as soon as they legalized it, him being pretty hip to agricultural trends, jumped on that. He's probably an old stoner too. I haven't ever smoked with him, but he's cool with it. As far as I know. So anyway, he's probably jumped on it just for his own joy, and he seems to get a real kick out of it. It's like, I never thought I'd be hiring my daughter's best friends for to trim weed, right? It's like, it's a crazy situation for people who, like, it was illegal when I started smoking, but it's a weird thing. So anyway, he's excited about it. He wants to help us out. Me and a few other guys try to do stuff in agriculture and in general. And so he definitely was like kind of hinting towards like, you guys should do it, man. Like, there's a lot of money here, and I think I've got some buyers. I can get you involved in it. So once Andrew kind of pitched me that idea, hopefully I'm not jumping ahead of your question.
No, that's perfect. Right?
But, he tells me, basically, dude, you don't have a track record. You can't ask for money. This isn't a good idea. But you're working with this guy. He is, he's looking to maybe not to expand, but he knows that he's kind of at the limit of his own business with this, where, he's growing as much hemp as he can. And he's not really able to supply the buyer that he sells to. So, he mentioned that, and he's been very encouraging. So why don't you talk to this guy about helping him out more, or in the least getting him to lease land to grow from you? And I thought, wow, what an idea. Cause that's so much easier to do in a financial way and in a legal setup or in a business way. So,
so it would be like an expansion of his business. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I saw a few different paths to take here.
Okay.
Because someone in Nick's position, someone who's just starting out, no matter what the business is, like real estate, for example, every young, enthusiastic guy in real estate wanting to get going is desperate for a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the biggest thing that they're missing. Like, that whether they realize it or not, if they had a mentor, everything else would start falling into place if the mentor is the right person. Right? Without a mentor, they're kind of going blind. They're going, how do I find an investor? How much should I ask for? How do I structure a return? They have all these questions, an endless amount of questions. But somebody who's established, who's been doing it for a while, maybe is older, their pain points are they want help. They want to outsource as much as they can. Like, they're probably not down for getting up every morning at 4 a.m. and going and milking the hemp.
Right. Exactly. Right?
That's what you do. So, there's nothing more appealing. This is going to sound a little creepy, but there's nothing more appealing to an old businessman than a young, enthusiastic go-getter of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, even for me, I would love to find somebody who just wants to learn from me. I don't know if I have enough knowledge to be beneficial to that person, but I would love someone just following me around, learning from me, that I could put to work, and they would be in a position to take ownership of whatever their duties are. And it sounds like Nick is that person. And it sounds like this guy is that perfect mentor. So I thought, just that relationship alone can create a million different scenarios that could be a win-win situation. It doesn't have to be just pure dollars and cents, and it doesn't have to be reinventing the wheel.
Right.
This guy already has a business model. This guy already has the mode of production.
He already has buyers.
He already has buyers. He has everything that Nick doesn't have yet. But Nick has the one thing this guy doesn't have. Nick has time. Nick has energy. Nick has more land.
It's fucking three things.
So I thought, on one hand, Nick could treat it as a real estate deal alone, meaning Nick will lease this guy land or sell this guy land or do whatever he can to make money off the pure land. And then the operational side, maybe Nick can just be employed by the guy to work it.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Nick's getting paid rent for these plots of land.
Right.
Nick can then take that money and do whatever he wants with it. There's your fundraising source right there without having to go out and get an investor per se.
Well, you strengthen your relationship or modify your relationship with this guy to learn everything you possibly can from him in the meantime through
exactly
like a closer working connection.
Or, and this is also going to grow and build. This is going to snowball into a better, stronger, more fruitful relationship for the both of them if they both continue to get on this path. But another scenario that I thought could have been doable is, okay, this guy expands his business onto your land, but you're the operator, he's the investor, so to speak. But Nick doesn't need to go and raise the money and handle the money. This guy can go and buy the supplies, pay for the seeds, do all these things.
Transplant something that's already working
and
to
Nick
another operation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just duplicate it and then grow from there. Who knows what doors are going to open up at that point?
Right.
Because while Nick is thinking about this at the $20,000 to $30,000 scale, who the hell knows? What if they have 1 year of a couple acres of crops and they have so much success? Next year we hear from Nick and he's shopping for 100 acres somewhere.
Right. And just orienting yourself to providing the maximum amount of value for the opportunity and the education that you're getting. Like, I watched Andrew do this with the guy who was his real estate mentor. You were running errands, if need be, for
yeah,
the guy.
I took every opportunity I could to run errands for the guy. He's not a mentor in the sense that I'm talking about here. It's not like I follow the guy around. It's not like I
have him
around all the time.
Right.
But I can count on him for input and advice to a point, but I sure as hell took every chance I could to do him a favor if possible, because there could be some business relationship in the future between the two of us and that. And I think he's a great guy and he's a smart guy and I trust his insight.
Right.
So when he called me up a few weeks ago with an emergency and he's out of state on a Friday night at 9:30, luckily I was a loser and I was in bed already.
Mm-hmm.
I could go and solve his problem for him. And I was his hero.
Yeah.
I didn't ask for anything in return.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm not saying you shouldn't ask for anything in return here. If you have something tangible to offer, like land, then yes, structure a deal. I'm sure you can figure out what the going rate for an acre of land is for renting or whatever it might be. So you can work out those numbers. But those are just, without knowing how this farming industry works, I do know how to kind of look at a scenario and I think put together a situation where everyone wins. And that's on the surface, that's what I was able to figure out. But I'm sure Nick's in a position to figure out a lot more scenarios that can be beneficial in a number of different ways based on everybody's needs.
Exactly. So Nick, right. where are you at?
And I think I'm taking those opportunities because there's definitely just random things where, you know, he does other farm work. You know, he has to leave town to do, he does certification kind of things for other farms. So he's traveling and inspecting other farms a lot. And, you know, he needs people to help him out. And I've got myself and two other people that work with me that are more than excited to work for, you know, a little bit of money just to be around here. You know what I mean? To stay local, not to go to town for work.
Are they reliable?
They're fairly reliable.
Reliable. Okay. So
yeah, that's the problem. So I can sometimes get, you know, it's, am I reliable too? That's a problem. But like, if you ask me to do something, you're like, and I am taking care of your animals, I do it.
Okay. And but if, so here's the thing, like, and these are the people that you're bringing with, and those people are going to be accountable to you, right? Or you're going to be, let me say that again.
You're responsible for
those people. Okay. So you have a motivation here. They might not, right? If they're just like, I like to be around hemp and I don't want to have to go all the way to town.
That's the biggest part that scared me was Nick started this whole call with, I enjoy working around weed.
Yeah. Yeah. So like I think you need to prepare yourself for like a higher level of commitment. You need to be realistic about, and this is one of the hardest things to do. I'm twice your age. Still hard for me to do. Is to realistically understand and budget the amount of time you have to devote to a new thing, considering all of the responsibilities that you already have. So you're not overextending yourself or overpromising and then under-delivering and disappointing somebody. You want to set expectations, and I would say exceed expectations in this case, to provide the maximal amount of value to this guy in exchange for what he can do for you. So if the people that are with you because they're your buddies are kind of dead weight, fairly reliable, you know, like fair in baseball cards, fair is one step above throw it away. Right.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe I should rephrase it. I think these we're all reliable, but it does depend. Our problems are that we have, you know, we work on a farm with a lot of animals, and that's unpredictable. So to this extent that we're unreliable is sometimes a goat gets injured or stuck in a fence, or the yaks get out and we have to spend an hour chasing them down. So we're not reliable in the sense that I couldn't work a 9-to-5 job doing this. I couldn't mm-hmm. go into town and work a regular job, but for something that's nearby and with the level that he's expecting of, you know, he's a farmer too, and he knows that we're right down the road, and there's a fair bit of, not when you're taking care of his animals, but there's a fair bit of like time commitment is not so important of when you do it. It's just that you do it within, you know, the harvest season. So you know what I mean? Sure. So we're reliable. When we say we'll do something, we do it, unless there's a goat out and we have to deal with the emergency.
All right. Well, maybe just,
but there are a fair deal of emergencies.
Maybe just work on your response to that question. Like if I'm reading over a questionnaire filled out by potential business partners or job applicants, you know, and I'm the person making the decision here, under the question, are you reliable? If it's not checked, yes. and instead it says define reliable. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to hesitate.
Right.
Yeah.
I think there's, I do think there's just a great opportunity considering like what so many people your age feel like they have to do, the rails they have to ride.
Right.
This is a really exciting thing, especially considering since you already found a passion and brought it into existence. I see no reason why you can't do that again. It just might, like we've talked about for the last hour here, require some reimagining of the means of doing it. And I think we have something, and that something could take a variety of forms, which is great. So what is your next move going to be?
So, my next move is to talk to him about it. He's interested. I've since the call with Andrew, I've talked to him just to, you know, say, hey, I'm interested in learning more. I don't think it's something that I can do on my own right now, but I'd like to help you out with what you're doing here with the hemp and with farming in general. And he said, well, that's cool. And if he likes that we have a contracting service. So he says, if you can keep me out of some paperwork, then I think we can definitely work something out. So the next step is to talk to him directly and kind of go through these value pitches of like, hey, this is what I think I can do for you consistently and reliably, and you know, this is what I think you can do for me. Is there a way we can, you know, make it work?
So how many acres does he currently have?
He has less than 40, and like most of, I think he's only done maybe 10 acres of hemp.
Okay. And I probably asked you this before, what's stopping him from either adding another 10 acres of his own land? Like, so answer that question first. What's stopping him from dedicating more of his land to hemp if it's so fruitful?
It's a good question. And I kind of wonder myself, it's just what he has expressed to me that he's got the maximum amount he can do. He has other pieces of land that I feel like he could turn into hemp, but he's also growing blackberries for specialty vinegar. And he also grazes some cattle. So I think he's trying to preserve a larger system. He doesn't want to do a large monocrop in his
So he's diversified.
Yeah. What's the impact on the soil? I mean, I'm sure it's not bad as like tobacco, but like,
oh yeah.
I mean, does it strip the soil of its nutrients pretty quickly? And does it take a long time to regenerate and all that?
I actually need to learn more about that. But from my knowledge, just my limited knowledge, because I don't know the exact nutrients and the numbers of what it does. But from my knowledge, it does a pretty good job at mining minerals, so it does take some nutrition out, but I think it can be put back in a lot of ways, and I think that he has a system of cover cropping and rotating growth.
Well, yeah, because that was the other question I was going to ask about your two or three available acres. Like, they can't all three can't be hemp all the time, right?
Right.
So like, what do you have to rotate through, like an acre and a half, like acre and a half back and forth, one hemp, two vacant, is the regeneration process 2 years, 5 years, 7 years? And like, then if there's things that can put nutrients back into the soil, those things are an expense. And if right. there isn't, and that doesn't work, and 2 acres have to be vacant, that's an expense, you know? So, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think that, like, Andrew's advice as far as having a mentor relationship and removing as many question marks, because like, I could give you, I mean, I think I've given you maybe 10. I'm sure Andrew gave you a bunch in the call. If we could put out 40 question marks here at this phase where, you know, you think you're ready to look for money, maybe a year with this guy with clear expectations, not just about what you can do for him, but what you want to get out of it and what your goals are for yourself too. Maybe a whole bunch of those question marks could be removed, right? While you're, you know, getting money and generating a better opportunity for the future.
And this is also an opportunity for you to build up that track record where if you can take ownership, not in a legal sense, but in a workflow sense of some portion of his operation where you control it start to finish using the resources that he's created, you can then show that as a track record. Hey, here's what happens when I operate an acre of hemp.
Yeah.
It costs this much, bottom line. Here's how much it brings in. Here's the profit. Here's the rate of return that I can promise you, potential future investor. You have the opportunity to develop that without any real risk on your part if you can prove that you're capable to this guy. Now, here's a question that I would really, really want to get answered if I were in your shoes, if you don't know the answer already. But, okay, so this guy has land. He's diversified. A quarter of it is used for hemp, whatever it might be. So I can understand the reluctancy to use all of his land for hemp, but what's stopping him from going and buying more land? I mean, if it's that successful of a crop, if it makes that much financial sense the way you laid it out to me, then this guy should be desperate to expand. What's stopping him from expanding? So what's his pain point? Is it because if it's that successful, he should have money? If he has money, he should be able to reinvest in more land and expand. Now, maybe, you know, only doing this for 2 years, then we're very, very new and fresh at this, and he just hasn't really gotten past operating what he has currently. But explain to me what's stopping him from just buying up every acre of land he can and growing hemp on it.
I believe it's just the work. Like, he's got enough on his plate at the moment.
So he's got enough money to do that if he wanted to. Are you saying that? Okay.
I think so. I think he's sitting very well. I think they're financially comfortable.
Perfect opportunity for you to take ownership and allow him to pursue larger opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So find out what he would rather spend his time doing. Most likely it would be growing the bottom line, but him out there doing the technician work, running around, riding a tractor is not his.
I actually think that is what he wants to do. I think he's less motivated by the profit and the more so by the time factor.
Okay, so run the business
he likes to farm.
Okay, yeah, but it's still the same thing. I agree with what Andrew said.
Whatever he likes to do, let him do that. Take away the stuff he doesn't like.
Yeah, he's got some kind of deficit of things that he likes or some kind of surplus of things that he doesn't. And you can be helpful in one of those two places.
Right. Right. So he doesn't want to find land, but I do.
Yeah.
And I have land.
And he's warm to the idea of you doing this, right? He's already encouraging you doing this. So it's not like this is a super, it doesn't sound like this is a super hard sell.
Right. He's already sold on Nick. He hired Nick.
Right. Now, I mean, but just in the idea of the hemp thing, and one of the pieces of advice that I was going to give before I knew anything about this, all I knew was hemp, was, you know, beware of people who pursue this kind of stuff ideologically, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because that could just
never
be
trust
disastrous.
Anybody who has ideals.
Yeah. That could just be disastrous, though, right? Like people who think this is a cool idea and, yeah, man, everybody wants CBD oil, but they don't have the know-how, they don't have the experience, they don't have the work ethic. I wanted to make sure you weren't getting wrapped up in something like that.
Yeah,
not that I wouldn't think you would
sure.
know.
If you ever meet somebody.
So, part of the reason why I didn't consider this until somebody's like, hey, dude, there's a lot of money in this. As I'm like, this isn't what, you know, this is too much of a big industry and such a big thing to get into. And when I'm looking at this, there are so many people that have made big mistakes financially in Oregon that have lost a lot of money doing this. So I am really trying to be careful with that. And I'm trying to look at it from a agricultural systematic sort of way. Is this really a cash crop? And can I dedicate a minimum amount of acreage to growing a lot and then support my larger system? Cause that's the thing that I'm into. Like the CBD and whatever, smoking weed is fun, but that's the reason why I don't sell recreational stuff is it's just too complicated and I don't like selling it because I can just do it without having money involved in my hobby, you know what I mean? But in this sense, it's an opportunity for me to just make a lot of money in a few seasons. And you know, my thought is if it does really well and I'm going really good with it, maybe I'll expand and do it for a couple of decades. But if I can make a few million dollars, I could be done, you know, and not really do much for the rest of my life, you know, in terms of business, because that's kind of what I'm motivated by.
Right.
Not being involved in that market, because it's cool stuff. It works, right? But it's not the miracle thing that I think people paint it as.
Just beware, if you run into anybody, you meet somebody new and you go, wow, that guy is cool.
Yeah.
If you say that to yourself, also tell yourself, don't ever hire him.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. I think you guys are right.
Well, would you be willing to follow up with us on another call, like once this is all taken care of? Maybe we should do like a young, not a young hemp farmers roundtable, but like a young entrepreneurs kind of roundtable.
With who?
Nick and others. We could find two more guys.
I'd love to do it. It'd be fun.
Nick, you got to find guys for us. We don't know anybody young besides you and Alex.
I've got some people. I'm meeting more young farmers and I'm trying to turn them on to School Sucks.
Oh, awesome. I appreciate that.
I don't introduce Puke in the Gang or Portman Show to anybody yet, but.
Rude.
I have some close friends that I try to get them to listen to. And anyway.
Well, that's awesome. Is there anything else you want to add to the conversation before we wrap up today? I feel like we got a lot done.
No, I just really appreciate it. I have done decently well on my business ventures and without schooling, without a mentor, because I've been able to you know, tap into the network of people who I met through School Sucks. And it's been amazing, you know, people between Drew Sample and Chris Stefanik, Nathan Frazier, Kevin Geary, all these people that are producing, some great content and have been actually personally helpful to me. It's been very much a blessing to be able to participate in this community. So I appreciate this kind of encouragement, because I think that the reason why I'm not a total dumbass stoner is because I had good influences as I was growing up, listening to podcasts and just having a weird desire for understanding the world and politics. And it drove me to entrepreneurship and taking responsibility to provide my own value to get through in life.
I'm honored that I could have any part of that, Nick. That's awesome. Thank you very much.
And I'm really happy that you just took the time to kind of talk through this with me, because again, I thought I had nothing to add to your situation, and I felt really good coming away from that phone call, because I'm realizing more and more, I love doing this kind of stuff. I love trying to analyze a situation and kind of work that muscle. And it's not, you don't get to do that very often. And in your own life, you don't feel as free doing that because you're too caught up in the details. But when looking at somebody else's situation, you're not getting hung up on the details, and the perspective might be a little fresher or more big picture thinking.
Exactly. And yeah, it was a very helpful phone call. I appreciated you taking the time for that. It was, you know, it's funny that, you know, it's weird how that just those, you know, just an hour of listening to somebody gave you a new idea how much it can change something, because nobody in the mastermind had that kind of feedback, which, you know, they had feedback on other pieces of what to do to set up a business plan. It had to do with how I asked the pain point. But, you know, that was just a very revolutionary idea to me. You know, just I didn't think about it.
Well, here's the thing. Smart people are they're really good at whatever they're good at. They're experts on something or other. So if you're in a mastermind, I assume it's with smart people, and they're good at stuff. But they're only going to see things through their very narrow but clear lens. I am not smart. I'm not good at anything. Therefore, I can look at the whole situation and give you the perfect advice.
Isn't that interesting? It seems like counterintuitive, but it really works.
But no, I do. I'm starting to really believe in my unwritten philosophies of oversimplifying. Like, step back. Does it make sense? Big picture. Build in tons of cushion and just go for it. The details will all get ironed out as you go.
Makes sense, man.
I don't know that it does, but
no, I think simplifying is the best way to do it. You do have to get like complicated to do the detail work, right? But to gauge a plan.
Yeah. When is the best solution ever complicated? That's kind of what I keep defaulting back to, no matter who I'm talking to.
And overcomplicating is also a way to throw an anchor in the water.
Yes. So I wanted to follow up on the last discomfort zone.
Oh.
Because a good amount of time has passed since the last recording.
Yeah.
Right? That was a big deal. Entertaining the job offer and then the whole conversation shifting into me, you know, doing my own thing even more.
Yeah.
So an update for everyone is I have quit all external imposition jobs, and now I do nothing but make YouTube training videos for how to set up houses.
Nice. You making any money with that?
No.
Yeah, it's tricky.
So I actually, I appreciated everyone's input and feedback on that, but it's not something I'm going to do. It's not an area of the market that I can own in any way.
Just a recap before you go any further. Andrew was offered a job at the executive level with a company similar in the same industry, a company that he works with currently. It was attractive for lots of reasons. He was worried about it being an interference with his current real estate ventures. We took it to Richard Grove's autonomy group. Every Tuesday night, I do a Q&A in there. So I asked if Andrew could come in and just kind of explain this problem he was having. A lot of the feedback that he got was about once people understood how knowledgeable he was on the subject of real estate and was attracted to a job as a revenue source for the purpose of, well, one of the purposes being reinvestment
yeah.
in real estate. There were lots of ideas about him developing his own information products on how to do what he does, also starting out with pretty much no money, right?
Right.
No money, no experience, but look at me now, kind of like a course.
Yeah, I don't need to like open up another door in the sinking Titanic and like swim in the dark mm-hmm. into another room.
No, exactly. Every time Andrew opens a computer, he complains about something within a couple of minutes. And I just don't see him somebody bound. He needs to be on the move a lot. He needs to have lots of irons in the fire. He has more irons in the fire. He has more fires. I mean, he ran out of room in the fire for irons and had to start new fires. So, the number of things that he's handling right now, the idea, I know I'm speaking for you, but I knew what the answer was going to be when we were sitting in that call, of learning a whole new discipline to shift attention away from things that are working, whether that be his job, where now a company is offering him an executive-level position, or all these real estate things that are starting to take off. It's like, well, why don't you take effort and attention away from that and put it into this thing that, by all indicators of your preferences, you will hate doing and you know nothing about. So that just, I totally agree that didn't seem like the right move.
Yeah, and it's not even so much that. Like, I get it. Passive income, create something that will work for you going forward. I get it.
That's real estate, though, also.
That's also a million other ideas that I hear about, read about, learn about, and can't pursue.
Exactly. Sure.
And that and a million other ideas that I would rather pursue than YouTube videos or Facebook marketing.
Yeah.
Or amen. Whatever. I don't know. It's a future I don't want to be a part of.
I agree.
And that's just me. But my hang up with whether or not to actively pursue this position was more some mental, spiritual, like, am I giving up on a dream? And the more time went by, the more I realized, oh, fuck you, Andrew. What, like, what am I talking about? Just take the money. Mm-hmm. If it's offered, take it. I've never been qualified for anything I've ever done.
Yeah.
I'm lucky to have this offer, and I need to explore it and pursue it. Now, there are plenty of hurdles to deal with and going down that path, but I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And I'll figure out how to juggle everything too. So the update is 1 week from today, I will be sitting down for an official interview with the CEO and the bosses from this company. But some of the issues are, if all goes well, which I'm led to believe that it should, and I don't think I'd be offered this if it wasn't likely to go well.
Right.
If it does go well, then the hang up is, okay, what kind of timeline do I create? And Rich had really good input on that. What kind of timeline do I create for leaving my current job? Rich's input was, find your replacement. I would love to do that. I would feel so much better about the whole thing with my current boss and leaving and all of that. But man, that's a tall order. That's such a tall order to find that individual.
Yeah.
So that'll end up being the next priority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine that would be very difficult. Replacing at somebody like at equal level is going to be very, very difficult.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I don't even know how you would begin. I mean, I'm sure there's a process, but I don't even know where it would begin.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, we'll hear about that more next time, and I think future shows will be shifting more into personal matters. We have personal matters to discuss. But if more of these like priority things come up, if we can help a friend and a listener like Nick, we're happy to do it. So thanks again, Nick, and we will definitely look forward to following up with you in the near future.
Yeah, I really expected to see some updates between our conversation and now, but I hadn't seen any, so I thought maybe I was full of shit.
You were full of shit?
Yeah. I thought if I wasn't full of shit, surely I'd see some updates on you know, what's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. No, I move slow. Over here on the West Coast, we move slower than y'all, man. My plan is I'll get to him by the end of the year, and I'm going to talk to him this week. I'm going over there to take care of his animals, so I'll chat about it.
Yeah, rehearse that conversation.
Oh, absolutely. I do. This is one of those, that's one of those things I do in the mirror. I think about those conversations.
Right. Watch.
Shit. Should I rehearse for this interview?
Maybe a little. You guys should watch Taxi Driver for inspiration. He rehearses things in front of the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nice. So, okay. We'll leave it there for now. Nick will connect with you again soon.
Awesome.
All right. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Someone in the chat, Andrew, says, keep it up, Brett. I enjoy your work. And his name is Trey A. And I hope it's Trey Anastasio, the lead singer of Phish.
I hope it's a guy named Abe Trey that I went to high school with.
Trey A.
Maybe it's just a pseudonym for the internet.
Hmm. Yeah, sometimes people do that, I guess. Well, our plan, I'm gonna hold us accountable to the audience by putting this at the very end of the show. I said to Andrew, I would like to do the Discomfort Zone the first and the third week of every month, just sometime during one of those weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's workable for both of us. It's if one of us is out of town, it's something that we can do remotely. The Zoom thing is super easy. But just to keep this conversation more regular, we certainly really appreciate all the positive feedback we received. The people who are listening, both in the School Sucks and the Portmanteau audience, and the people who, whenever we...
And the Autonomy group, too. I got so much feedback from the last show. It was fantastic.
That's awesome. And people who watch us live, thank you, guys. Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Chat Says.
The chat says.
Oh, that's this person's name, Chat Says. So, an old friend of ours. But yeah, we'll try to make these more regularly. We'll try to make these more regular, and we definitely appreciate your attention.
And I want to put a disclaimer in. I feel like I was shitting on the Autonomy people for suggesting the...
Make a course path.
It's not that that's a bad idea.
No, of course not. It's just it's
if you Autonomy people, if you knew me, you would know that that is not a direction that you would advise me to go if you knew me.
It would have to be called surprise course. Surprise course. It would be called surprise live training, where you would have to like rove around somehow and hear people having this conversation.
Yeah.
And then spring all your knowledge on them at once in like an hour thing.
Right. Or like people I don't know have to be holding recording equipment and just come up to me like in a parking lot or something and ask me a question.
Yeah.
And then put a camera or a microphone in my face. And then an hour later, they'll have a course.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't know about it ahead of time.
Right.
Because then I'll have an opportunity to prepare. That won't go well.
No, Andrew doesn't prepare.
That's why I'm asking about this interview. Like now I'm nervous because I'm back in that situation where I go, well, this is something that you would have to be insane not to prepare for. But I'm looking at it and going, no, I should just show up just on time and walk in.
You got nice clothes?
Yeah.
You wear a suit?
I'm not because they know I'm coming from 6 hours away. And I'm not even sure that I can go there during business hours.
Ooh.
Because people are going to see me. People who can't see me being there, because if they see me, they're going to go, what are you doing here? Then they're going to go, hey, Andrew's boss. Why was Andrew out in this state today? And he's not going to know why. Then I'll have to explain why. I already feel awful not telling him. But I can't tell him until something's more concrete.
Yeah. Wear one of those green bodysuits.
Okay.
I don't know about showing up in an interview with that. Unless you had like a whole green screen and you could do like a presentation.
I would just blend into the screen.
Well, no, you cut parts of the suit off. So you've got like a hand. I'm here to lend a hand, and they put your hand in, but it's just a hand bite. So Jesus Christ, I haven't done an interview in a long
time. Coming out of a bank?
I might not be the best person to ask for interview advice. It's been a while.
It's not so much interview advice. I'm not worried about that.
No,
I'm just
I know.
Worried, should I be preparing at all? It's more of a prep versus no prep.
Well, you have a good connection with the guy who originally offered you the job. So, you know, just have a casual conversation. Like, how do you think this is going to go down? What do you think they're going to want to know from me? I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, you could obviously have a much better phrasing of that question, but I don't think there's anything wrong with asking that.
Well, he's going to be the guy doing the question asking.
Oh.
Probably.
Hmm. And who else is going to be there?
The CEO.
Okay.
That's it.
Hmm. Well, I think that's going to be... you're going to be operating at a much higher level of comfort knowing one of the people on the interview panel wants you to... That's an advantage nobody ever has.
Okay, yeah.
You know? I don't know.
I shouldn't even think about it. I should just not let it cross my mind until I walk in the door next Monday.
Okay.
I'm probably better off. I think thinking about it can only be damaging.
Yeah, I'm certainly somebody who can overthink things, so I identify with that. But now you look
bringing it up.
Andrew looks like he's overthinking something. He's got a look on his face of overthinking.
Yeah, I don't like any of this. Okay. Yeah, so that's the update. Next episode, we'll probably have more updates on that front. And there's a good chance that I don't get the job and I ruin whatever current job I have now and it all goes to shit.
Well, let's hope for something better than that. And that also has a silver lining because it forces you to really bear down on all the things you're excited about doing. I think I made it worse. I was trying to help. So we also want to make sure that all of you guys are listening to Portman Show. That is the comedy podcast Andrew and I do with our friend James. If you've heard us mention it as Puke in the Gang, it is a much more sophisticated show now that it doesn't have puke in the title anymore. And you really should be listening. And I'm really going to start promoting it to the School Sucks audience. Thank you so much for your support through Patreon. That is really, really helpful right now. And I have also, because of the success of the Discomfort Zone, all the positive feedback we've gotten, I've added another probably two or three times a month subscriber-only show called The Mastermind. And that is me and Richard Grove's autonomy group. We had 22 people the first time I did it, and maybe like 13 or 14 people the second time I did it. And people bring problems, and we talk about them. And I love that format so far. It's working out really well. So I hope you'll check those out if you can. Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll be back soon. I've been taking off and landing, but this airport's closed. How much bigger this fog is going to get? Well, God only knows. Just when you think that you got a grip, sneaks off, it gives you the slip, as if you ever knew what it was, taking you down the line.
just when you think you can let it rip, you're pounding the pavement in your daddy's wingtips, as if you had someplace else to go, or a better way to get there. Tearing through the cotton fields and bus shelters of the South, running helter-skelter down through the Mississippi Delta, with no place to call your own. Mixing up drinks with mixed feelings, all along the pain was peeling, down to an Indian blanket on a pony, with no rider in the flesh and bone. Looking for his buffalo. There's only two things in life, but I forget what they are. It seems you're either hanging on a moonbeam's coattails or wishing on stars. Just when you think that you've been chipped, the bearded lady comes and does a double backflip. You run up and join the circus. Yeah, you just let that tearing through the cotton fields and bus shelters, on the South, running helter-skelter.